You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome in Rose City to the Soccer Made in Portland podcast. I'm Ryan Clark, joined by Chris Reifer. And Chris, this is March. It is the beginning of March Madness today. A little basketball made in Portland to start out this podcast. But what's your final four? What have you made your bracket with about 30 minutes to go here?
I'm actually a conscientious objector to brackets.
Oh,
I got off the bracket the bracket racket in college when I sort of just got to the point where as I was watching games I felt like rooting for my bracket was like inhibiting my ability to just enjoy the madness and so I've become a little bit of like a bracket agnost and now I just like enjoy the madness and enjoy the craziness and root basically universally for upsets. Rather than being dictated by, you know, how terrible it would be to lose an Elite Eight team in the first round and those kinds of things.
So nerdy bracket boy in me versus Chad basketball enjoyer in Mr. That's, Chris Reifer.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the big rift on today's podcast. Yeah.
Who do you have? What's going around the office pool in on your bracket?
So basically my final four, we got Alabama, Texas, Memphis, and Gonzaga as the four, and Texas beating Alabama in the championship game. I really like the Longhorns this year. They play some good hoops, so excited. For them to lose today.
By all the problems surrounding the Alabama team over the last few weeks, you don't think that's going to set them up for a disappointing tournament?
I think that type of stuff can definitely have an effect, but I like their region in terms of their ability to advance. So once they get to the Final Four, we'll see. I have gone back and forth between having them lose to Memphis in the Final Four, who they played a close game with early in the year, and having them make it to the championship game, which I think they will. But Longhorns all the way, baby. Let's hook them. So,
you see, bracket. This is exactly it. Brackets would put me in the uncomfortable position of rooting for institutions like the University of Texas,
putting you in the same like category as Matthew McConaughey. I feel like is never a net positive unless you're talking about wealth. But
shout out to Matthew McConaughey, by the way, and his soccer club for losing to Violeta FC in CONCACAF Champions League. If you don't know who Violeta is, that's perfectly understandable. Nobody did until about a week ago. They are a semi-pro club from Haiti. They played their away leg in the Dominican Republic, which, if you're familiar, is not Haiti. And Violeta game out 3-2 on aggregate over the Fighting Matthew McConaughey's of Austin. So
yeah,
shout out to Matthew McConaughey for, I think without question, there's been debate about the 2008 New England Revolution against Joe Public. I think this is the worst MLS loss in CCL history, just given the difference in MLS quality, or I should say in regional competition history, given the difference in quality between MLS in 2008 and 2023, this is absolutely inexcusable. Josh Wolf and his team should be, and it looks like are, hanging their heads pretty low after that one. But shout to Violetta.
Yeah,
pretty excellent job. Awesome story. Like, all the adversity in the world. Can't play a home game because it didn't meet CONCACAF standards. Had like 12 players. I think it actually had 14 players who could actually travel to the U.S. for the second leg and nonetheless came out with a dub. Nice work to them. That's an amazing story. And Austin are the goats.
Pretty shameful moment for MLS generally.
Yeah. And by the way, that's lowercase goats, not the initialism.
Bracket. Yeah. Definitely not the greatest of all time. It's definitely the woat in terms of games for MLS in that competition. Speaking of upsets, maybe not one as lopsided as that. St. Louis City SC came into town last weekend to face the Portland Timbers. And for a majority of the match, they were the better team. And
yeah, not an upset at all. The better team won that game.
Yeah, well, at this point, yeah, you could argue that St. Louis, given the injuries to Portland, on paper, a better team at this point. And record-wise, they are 3-0-0 now to start their expansion season in St. Louis. Timbers have one win and two losses. Tough 2-1 loss for them against St. Louis. Couldn't produce anything. Just not a lot of identity, not a lot of really anything in terms of producing on the attack. I think they defended decently well, but all it took
but was also embarrassingly at times.
All it took was two, yes, embarrassing moments like they had.
The second goal is awful. Yeah. I mean, a deep free kick like that. It's not like that's coming in from just outside the box. A deep free kick like that bouncing in the box and then being scored by an opponent's header. You gotta be kidding me. Mm-hmm. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, it was painful. I mean, there were moments that were confounding in that game for the Timbers. And, you think about the injuries as the big issue hanging over everything. But I don't think you can fully use it as an excuse in terms of the performances we've seen on the field. It's just been a lack of identity, a lack of vision in terms of how this team has played for the first three games. And it's probably not going to get a whole lot better considering the injuries that they have to deal with. Just a laundry list of players that are out for Saturday against Atlanta.
It's week three.
And it's week three. And you know, I will say this as a caveat. Most of what you do for the first half of the season, given how many teams make the MLS Cup playoffs now under the new format, it doesn't matter nearly as much as it probably should. So there's a window here for the Timbers to get healthy and figure their stuff out without it being completely devastating. But there's also a chance that it is completely devastating, that they lose game after game, that they're dropping points left and right, and they're sitting near the bottom of the standings in Wooden Spoon territory after the next few weeks.
Soccer. Yes. And like that was what that was against St. Louis. That was Wooden Spoon soccer that we all saw.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate for a team that, you know, when healthy, has, I think, the talent to be a top four team in the West, but talent doesn't win you those games, right, all the time. Even if they were fully healthy, I think they would still be in a bit of a uncertain spot right now, given the form that they're in, given that lack of, you know, identity and purpose on the field that they are currently playing with. Watching that St. Louis game, what were some of the major things, I guess, that stood out to you, Chris?
Well, I want to step back for a second and dispense with the notion that games in March aren't important or less important. A wise man once told me, every game is a final. And, you know, I think that has a certain mathematical allure to it, insofar as games in March, if you win them, you get 3 points. Games in October, if you win them, you get 3 points. And so if you get 3 points in March, that's three fewer points than you're going to need in October in order to, you know, qualify for the playoffs, achieve your goals, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. But it seems like we get to this point around about this time every year where the Timbers stumble out of the gates. They drop a few results that you know, I mean, the LAFC one, I think is understandable to some extent. The St. Louis one is less so. And the performances, I think, across the board just have not been good. And it seems like we get to this point every year where we start kind of hearing through the Whisper network that, hey, you know, I mean, it's March, it's MLS, lots of teams make the playoffs. Like, we got time to figure this out, yada, yada, yada. But a wise man once told me that every game is a final. And I think if you're a Timbers fan, as I certainly am, you're getting awfully sick of watching the team be bad early in the season and hoping that maybe they can put it together sometime in the summer and go on a run and get into the playoffs and maybe be like a hot hand in the playoffs. Frankly, that approach lacks ambition. That approach just completely writes off the supporter shield. And it also defies just the simple mathematical logic of, if you want a good seed in the playoffs, you need to be good all year. And it is just as important to be good in March, because those games are also worth 3 points, as it is to be good in October. And so, you know, I just completely reject, as a matter of the expectations that I have for the club, the idea that it's okay that they're not very good right now. I don't think it's okay. And as I look at the team, I think they are unprepared to play. They're unprepared to compete with most of the rest of MLS in a lot of ways right now. I think they're unprepared from a roster construction perspective. They're trying to build the plane in the air again, while they're making important starting level signings here in the middle of March and seemingly going into April now, with respect to a center back signing that they say they're targeting. And you had 4 months of offseason to get that business done, and it just didn't get done. And frankly, both of those positions were not only foreseeable that they would need to sign, they were foreseen. They said at the beginning of the offseason that those were things that they were targeting. And they didn't get that business done. And now they're trying to get it done while the plane's in the air. Again, I think it's easier and more effective to build the plane before takeoff. And I think the Timbers year in, year out don't do that. So they're unprepared from that perspective to compete in MLS right now. I think they're unprepared physically. I don't think you can look at the injury list and simply say and say that's normal for week three. What, they have 8-9 guys out for their week four game at Atlanta? And, you know, it's sort of a combination of soft tissue stuff that they've picked up over the last few weeks and knee stuff that appeared in training camp. They're unprepared physically to play.
And this is the list of injuries, just for those who...
Yeah, let's get the facts before we get to the commentary.
Yeah, just the facts of the situation here. So Evander out due to a hip injury. That's the starter. He had been dealing with an ankle issue before, and then, you know, they said strained groin, but as Chris has pointed out, you know, groins and hips tend
groins
to be
and hips often go together.
Yes, interrelated. So that could potentially just be the same injury as the one he was pulled off for, and they're just identifying it as a hip. But, you know, the remainder of the injury report beyond Evander, Felipe Mora out until the middle of the summer with a knee injury, Sebastian Blanco out until question mark with his chronic knee issues. David Ajala is out with a knee injury for probably another week or two is what Gio was thinking. Same goes for Dairon Asprilla with a right knee injury. Tega Ikoba, he came back and was training with the team as of last week after having knee issues, and then it appeared that he re-injured himself during training. That was something that the media was there for and witnessed last week. Jimmy Chara out for likely multiple months now with a right hamstring injury. Cristian Paredes is out with a hamstring issue as well, but not nearly as serious as Jimmy Chara's, probably a couple of games. And that's a pretty long list of players there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 contributors.
Eight guys out. I think that, you know, like sometimes injuries are bad luck, right? I mean, spit happens. And sometimes that's just what injuries are. But if you're, I mean, good leaders are skeptical of convenient explanations, right? Good leaders, when they're assessing a problem, aren't going to sort of readily grab for something as convenient as, bad luck, woe is me. And given that the Timbers seem to have these injury issues with some consistency from year to year, I think there needs to be a pretty serious analysis as to why that is, whether they're bringing in the wrong players, whether their loads in their training sessions aren't quite right, whether their sports science stuff isn't quite right, whatever it is, that's got to be figured out. But at this point, it's an organizational weakness. And I don't think you can look at that injury list in week three going to week four and conclude that this team is physically prepared to play. They're not. And so that's another way in which they're unprepared. And then getting to the game against St. Louis, I thought they were tactically unprepared to play. And I don't know exactly why that is, so I'm not pointing my finger at any particular person or any particular group of people, because I just don't have kind of the, you know, detail of knowledge. I wasn't in training, right? I wasn't in any of those things. So I can't say that any one person or group is responsible for this. But in that 3-5-2, which just is structurally different from the 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 base that we see them play. Not to be harsh about it, but they just looked like they never trained it before. And we know they did, because Zach McGrath said last week that they had trained it.
Yeah,
But they looked like they'd never trained it before.
Yeah.
And I think you saw that in the attacking sequences, which frankly were nonsense. There was no width. There was no structure to them. Nobody was running off the ball. There was a lot of clumping that was at times reminiscent of Bill Orem's kick and chase team, where there was a lot of very, very tightly packed standing around waiting to look to see what whoever was on the ball was going to do. But there was very little structure to them. And that was really poor. Frankly, when you're only using 20 yards of the width of the field in an attack, it's not hard for two or three guys to defend, even if you have numbers. And that's basically where St. Louis was all day, where it wasn't hard for two or three guys to defend that Timbers attack, because there was no structure to it. The runs weren't there. Whether they were going to be coming from the wingback position or coming out of midfield, they just weren't there. And so it bogged down in sort of, you know, kind of improvisational combination play that just didn't work.
Right. And that has the potential to get even worse a week from now when they play the Galaxy, because they won't have Juan Mosquera, who got called up to the Colombian national team. He's a guy who's played well, been in good form, and been relatively dynamic for the Timbers so far this season. You think about the change at striker, how much of a difference did it really make? Not too much. He obviously, Fogassa, I think, is much more dynamic, much more interesting, and a better option right now for the team than Yaroslav Nizhkoda.
Yeah, he was better, but not a different, not difference making better.
Not difference making better. And you know, maybe Frank Bolli will be that, but who knows when Frank Bolli's going to get here.
Right? And who knows whether he'll be that. I mean, he's a high risk signing in terms of what he's going to produce this year. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a wild card. Could be good, could be not very good.
Right. And even that, even if he is a difference maker, even if, you know, he is that type of player, everything around him tactically and from a personnel perspective still has to work. Everything else has to fall into place. It can't just be, you know, give the ball to Frank and let him cook. Like it's very much going to be a challenge for the rest of the guys to gel, to be in better form. It's strange because, you know, you can only take so much away from preseason, but the approach, the way that they played in that Galaxy preseason game that I attended down in Palm Springs was a lot different than the way they have been approaching games so far in the regular season. they were a little more direct. They were crisp. They made great passes. I think that one of the major X factors was a guy like Eric Williamson, who I still think is in good form, but hasn't really shown in the regular season what I think he showed in preseason. And there are a lot of different cogs to this not working machine right now, this very broken, missing parts machine that is the Portland Timbers roster. But it's hard for me to imagine any of those things turning a corner this weekend in Atlanta. I think that's going to be a brutal match for them. Yeah. And beyond that Galaxy game, you're probably going to have the same lack of personnel, and it could be even worse considering Mosquera will not be there. So
arguably their best player to date.
Yeah, arguably their best player to date. It's a little grim. Like we can be doomers on this podcast a little bit, and I think that Timbers fans, I love them to death. I love their commentary and their intelligence on the Twitterverse. Timbers fans can be a little doomy in their own respect, but they have a good reason.
Sometimes doomerism is rational.
Yes.
And frankly, I don't think the Timbers have shown a lot to make that doomerism irrational so far.
No, I agree. Honestly, like normally it's just kind of part of the deal to be a little doom and gloom in the early part of the season as a Timbers fan. But at this point, the sky is not falling, but you can definitely see the cracks beginning to form.
The clouds are pretty dark.
The clouds are getting a little spooky in the distance for Portland.
The other thing that I thought was just a huge problem over the course of the game against St. Louis was the Timbers midfield balance and central midfield balance in particular was just brutal. And I think Christian Paredes was really important to the way they planned to come out to play, and him going off with that hamstring injury really hurt them quite a bit in that respect, because neither Williamson nor Evander do the sort of two-way work that Paredes does. And I thought when he came off, everything became quite imbalanced to the point where it frankly just wasn't hard for St. Louis to play around Diego Chara. Chara was on an island as really the only defensively oriented central midfielder at all. And maybe that's a job that he could have done at the age of 27 or maybe 32 or 33 even, but he can't do that job at 36 going on 37. I mean, there's just gotta be the acceptance of that. That there's no 36, 37 year old at a high level anywhere in soccer that can do that job. Like anywhere. And he can't. So I thought they St. Louis repeatedly were able to work around him. And because of that, even though they ostensibly had three center backs, although they really started pushing Dario Šeparović up almost as a right back as the second half went along, which was ineffective in the attack.
Yeah, and that was pretty wild to see for a guy that, you know, we love Dario. He's an entertaining guy and a good person, but he is the slowest player on the field. He's not a right back by like any stretch of the imagination. His foot speed, when you compare it to the rest of the guys on the field, very let's call it measured.
Yeah,
compared to the rest of the team.
But even if you have three, you're playing with in sort of a true three center back set, which I would still call it that throughout the game, although it started to meld into a four player back line as the game went along. But even if you're playing with three center backs, if opponents are bypassing your central midfield, you're still going to be very exposed. Because even those three center backs, if you get them pulled out into space, as St. Louis was doing pretty regularly, you're pretty exposed. And it's difficult to defend consistently that way. And I think that central midfield balance really, really hurt the Timbers as the game went along, which was another really worrying tactical sign, I think, for the Timbers, to which there's no obvious solution, right? Because Paredes is out. Ayala still isn't back, and even if he's getting healthier, given that he missed so much of preseason, he's going to have a ramp up period. And by the way, he's still developing in the first instance. So if your thought is, well, maybe Ayala is going to be back. And that, I mean, if you're counting on him to be your savior, that's not a great moment. That's not great. And Paredes will, it sounds like, get back, but with a hamstring, even a minor hamstring, it's going to be a few weeks, whether it's 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you know, I mean, who's to say, but it's going to be a few weeks. And I thought that was an enormously worrying sign against St. Louis, a team that doesn't have Thiago Almada. You know who does have Thiago Almada? Atlanta. I actually had the thought as I was watching the game against St. Louis of, my goodness, Thiago Almada is going to eat these guys alive. Put Almada on your fantasy teams, folks. Like, get him in there. Like, captain him. Do whatever needs to be done. Based on the way the Timbers played against St. Louis, he is going to shred them. I would be surprised if he doesn't have multiple goal contributions with the way the Timbers played last week.
Yeah, and you look at their game that they played against Charlotte. I mean, it's
3-0 basically by halftime and then, you know,
came in at a canter. Yeah. So that following that level of form for Atlanta, if they do on Saturday, it might be worse. And I you know, MLS is weird. There can be weird results all the time. The Timbers could astonishingly pull out a point out of this game, like in a 1-1 weird situation.
Possible.
It's possible. But I would lean much more so in the direction of, in terms of predicting, of it being a lopsided loss for Portland and them kind of just taking another week to figure their stuff out and go from there and see if they can get some points at home against the Galaxy. But it's grim. It's a really, really scary situation right now for Portland in the early going.
And so for all of these, you know, I guess just to kind of tie a bow on the whole thing, if I had one word to describe the Timbers right now, it's unprepared. And I think that is something that from the very top on down, they need to be pretty forthright with themselves about and figure out a way to fix it and to fix it as soon as possible. And unfortunately, I think they've got some pretty structural issues that are leading to that lack of preparation. But, you know, they are what they are, and they need to be addressed, and they need to be addressed urgently. Or this is going to be another year, like 2022, where they put themselves too far, they paint themselves too deep into a corner to get out of it, which was the story of 2022. They didn't lose. That season didn't fall apart because they stumbled into the finish a little bit. That season fell apart because they were in the race for the wooden spoon until June. And they weren't able to fully dig out of that hole. And it looks like we are headed that way again in 2023.
Transitioning to a team with a bit better prospects.
Better prepared.
Yeah. Little better situation. The Portland Thorns opened up their preseason on Sunday with a 1-0 victory over Rossing Louisville, thanks to a nice header late in the match by Megan Nally, who stepped in as a substitute and broke through after a whole bunch of opportunities that the Thorns were not able to convert. Then come last night, this is being recorded on Thursday, so Wednesday night, the Thorns played the U.S. U-23 youth national team and won 4-1 after going down 1-0. Little less important, I think, in terms of takeaways from that game. That's more of an opportunity to scrimmage, I think, than to play a real life type of game. I think the Louisville
lineups reflected that too.
The lineups reflected that heavy rotation. But you know, still a few scores. Izzy Diakia, who is a forward that Mike Norris and his coaching staff are very high on, somebody that
looked good in the Louisville game.
Yeah, she looked good in Louisville as well. Could really explode this year and be a Sam Coffey type rookie, maybe not to that level of immediate major contribution. That's a pretty unreasonable expectation to put on her. They're real excited about her either way. And there's a lot of forwards up there that Izzy's going to have to compete with. So it's a lot different than Sam's situation where she was plugged right in as a six and she shined. But a few other goals in that game, you know, Hina Sugita scored, Morgan Weaver scored, Sophia Smith did her thing, you know, put the ball in the net. And overall, you know, good start to preseason for the Thorns. They're starting to round into early season form a little bit. They've got OL Reign on Saturday. And then after that, 8 days later, the Thorns open up their season against Orlando at home. You went to that preseason game against Louisville. What stood out to you about their performance and kind of what you're seeing of the early, you know, baby version of this year's Portland Thorns?
What stood out to me was how prepared they were. I think they, for a preseason game, preseason games are pretty ugly a lot because teams are figuring out the combinations, they're figuring out the rotations, they're working on those things that they need to work on in order to be ready to play in the regular season. And so they can be pretty ugly just from like a systemic perspective quite a bit. I thought the Thorns looked like a pretty well-functioning machine from a systemic perspective against Louisville. There were a lot of attacks that just didn't quite come off, I think because of just a little bit of a lack of sharpness, which is not worrying at this point. But in terms of how the structure was operating, even with some absences on the right wing, that Thorns left side was just absolutely bludgeoned Louisville basically through the entire first 60 minutes in which they had the starters on the field. And it was the combination of Megan Klingenberg, Hina Sugita, Rocky Rodriguez would rotate over there. And then Sam Coffey operating as the pivot point. I think they just totally dominated the game. And they dominated the game from sort of the X's and O's perspective that you love to see at this stage of preseason. And so I think overall that talk about a central midfield that had balance. The central midfield of Coffey, Rocky, and Olivia Moultrie in the Louisville game had pretty good balance. You want to see Moultrie find the game a little bit more than she did, but especially given that they were really targeting that left side, I think it's understandable why she didn't. But overall, I think that midfield functioned really well. As a person who was initially really skeptical about Sugita on the wing, I thought it looked great. And I thought she was really, really effective from that spot. And I thought they just needed a little bit of extra sharpness in the final third, which if you want to read anything into the midweek game against the U23s, it looks like that starting group did find a little bit of that sharpness in the final third.
Yeah, they subbed them in like towards the end of the game because, you know, it was a heavily rotated starting lineup.
And then it went from 0-1 to 4-1.
Yeah, very quickly. 0-4 real quick.
Which, you know, against the national team U23s, I think you would expect that to happen. You would expect the Thorns starters to be able to create a lot of chances against that group, and they did. So, you know, I think it'll be a good final test against the Reign this weekend. But in terms of the eye test as to how this team looks now a week and a half away from their opener, if I can read my calendar right, I think all systems are go. Like everything looks like it is coming along just as you'd like to see, which is both not surprising given the continuity in the player personnel from 2022, but is also reassuring given the chaos among the non-player personnel from 2022 to 2023. That you know, there were some, I think, subtle differences in the way they played. I thought they pressed a little bit more than they did under Reed Wilkinson, which is nice to see, and I think is something that this team has aptitude to be able to do, especially when you consider how athletic they are in that front three between Sugita, Smith, and eventually Morgan Weaver or Crystal Dunn, depending on how they shape up. My guess is that Dunn will probably play in central midfield and that Weaver will be in that front three, but that should be a pretty good pressing front three. And then if you add sort of at the point of the central midfield, done, that's a group that could be really disruptive and that should be really disruptive. And if they do that more, I think that's something that could be some upside for them. And they were doing it a little bit more. That's great. But in terms of the overall structure, it looked exactly as plug and play as it should have been. And I think that's a reassuring sign.
Yeah, this is really the same team as last year in the best possible ways. It's not stale. It's not, you know, just a repeat run it back type of situation. They are making these slight adjustments to the way they play. They are tinkering with different lineups and they have a larger pool of players from which to choose. And they're still very much that team that won the championship last year in NWSL. This is a really scary team for the rest of the league to think about having to play. Kansas City did a lot of great work to catch up to them, but they have nowhere near the continuity and chemistry that this group has. And it's going to take a lot of work for them to get to that point. Now, at the end of the season, will they be neck and neck? Probably. Yeah, that very well could be in my view, but there's an opportunity this year, I think, for Portland to separate itself from the pack because there isn't another team in NWSL that is bringing back this much talent, but also this much continuity. Last year's standings were very tight. Portland lost out on the Shield at the very end and barely did to OL Reign. But Sophia Smith and others have talked to me about this in preseason that this window before the World Cup is crucial for them to build up points in the standings and to try and separate themselves. She specifically said she has three major ambitions for this season, or for this year, I should say, in 2023. She wants to repeat as NWSL MVP, repeat as an NWSL champion, and win a World Cup title with the U.S. women's national team. Those are her three very achievable, but my gosh, those are some lofty goals for an individual player.
I'm hoping
to
make progress repaying my student loans.
I too would like to start paying back a greater portion of my student loans, which will be hanging over me for the rest of my adult life. But
yeah, so there, that's my objective for 2023, and you can compare that to Sophia's objectives for 2023.
I'd like to, you know, find some hobbies and, you know, outside of work and, you know, maybe watch some great movies this year and eat good food. Sophia Smith is trying to destroy the world essentially with her right foot, which she very well could. But gosh, how exciting, right? For a player like that, of that caliber, to be in a Portland uniform, for Portland soccer fans to witness what she can do. And I do think she'll take another big step this year. Obviously, her major focus is going to be the World Cup, but she's still going to be on the field tearing it up for the Portland Thorns for the vast majority of the season. And she could come back to Portland after the summer riding high on a potential World Cup title. And that would be awesome for not only her and for the women who are on that team, including obviously Becky Sauerbrunn and Crystal Dunn and potentially Sam Coffey. But it's great for Portland too, because you're talking about an iconic athlete making a name for herself, not just on the national stage with the NWSL, but on a global stage where she can have her superstar moment and potentially be the person that leads the U.S. to glory. I mean, what more do you want out of this sport?
If she starts hitting on all cylinders at the same time that Mallory Swanson is hitting on all cylinders as she is now, that's going to be a pretty fearsome U.S. women's national team attack.
Exactly.
One thing that I will say, and that you and I texted about during the game, is, I mean, to me, Sam Coffey looks like she did last year, which is basically like a player who is like bred in a lab to be an elite number six. Like basically just like the platonic ideal of a number six. And that's a position that the national team is looking for and that they've tried a few different things at, and they haven't played Coffey a ton. And I'm left scratching my head as to why. Because in terms of everything that she does on the field, her tactical awareness, her defensive ability, her both passing range, but also the speed with which she plays and the sharpness with which she plays, in, even in preseason, it's all national team level. And so that's a very round peg to fit into that very round hole in the national team. And I don't really understand why it hasn't been given a longer look. And as I think I told you during the game, at some point, the more she plays this way for the Thorns and the more she proves that that is the quality of player she is, it's on Vlatko that he hasn't figured out how to unlock that for the national team. And so, you know, we'll see. I agree with the uncertainty about whether she's going to make the trip to Australia and New Zealand for the World Cup. I think she absolutely should. And if I was part of the national team program, that would be a really important part of what I'm trying to figure out in these last few months before the World Cup. So I remained really, really impressed. I thought for extended periods of that game, she was the best player on the field. I think that is a really good sign for the Thorns that in addition to the superstardom that they have up top, they have a player who I think is an emerging superstar in what I think is the most important position on the field.
Right, and everybody else around those two individuals is so solid or even more than solid. They are aging stars. They are up and coming, you know, seriously positive contributors. You can't find a flaw. It's nuts to look at a team in NWSL, in modern NWSL, and look around all of their different positions, look at how they play, their tactics, and think, wow, I'm having trouble finding a problem here.
There's no obvious weakness for the Thorns. And that I think is exactly the challenge for NWSL teams. And look, the spillover effects of having such a reliable six are huge. That lets Hina Sugita take up more aggressive positions because she trusts Sam Coffey to be that pivot point and to make the right decisions and not, to not lose the ball. It allows Rocky Rodriguez, probably the middle player in that central midfield eight, to take up more aggressive spots, to be more of a complement to Sugita up that left wing, because she knows that Coffey's not going to lose the ball and isn't going to waste the ball and is going to make the right decisions and is going to put the passes on point that need to be on point and is a good defensive safety blanket. That's why I think the six is still the most important position of the 11. Because if you get that position right, it makes everybody else's jobs so much easier. And I think we saw that over and over and over and over again in the combination between Klingenberg, the combination play between Kling, Sugita and Rocky against Louisville, which was great. So I think, yeah, to put a bow on this one as well, the Thorns look very prepared. And I think there is every reason to believe that this is a team that should have the ambition of stepping into these for a few months of NWSL and being a bit of a terror. And they look certainly capable of that in preseason.
One more piece of news before we let everybody go. Janine Becky last night game for the Thorns. This is a rough piece of news for a team that's got a lot of positivity around it right now. She injured her knee, went down in a lot of pain, apparently, and was stretchered off. We don't know, obviously, the status of the injury yet, but given what folks who were in the stadium told me, it didn't look good at that moment. And they're going to continue to evaluate her, figure out the severity of the injury. And here's hoping that not only can she come back soon for the Thorns, but, you know, there's the Canada national team to consider as well for the World Cup. And she would obviously be a major contributor for that group. So everybody here thinking about Janine Becky at this point and hoping for a positive diagnosis as the next few days.
Yeah, come along. Let's hope it's not as bad as it at least sounded like it was, because that would certainly endanger her World Cup, and that would just forking suck.
Yes.
That would be really unfortunate and would feel really bad for Janine, who has done just an enormous amount of work for that Canada team, both on the field and especially this winter off the field, has been a huge leader for them in terms of their equity fight that they're having with Canada soccer. And so I think she would continue to serve that role as a leader within the Canada team, even if she isn't ready to go on the field. But you would like her to sort of have the reward on the field for all of the important work that she's done off of it. And if she's not able to make the World Cup, that'd be pretty good.
Absolutely. Well, that will wrap it up for us here on Soccer Made in Portland this week. We will be back next week to talk the Atlanta United game and that wrapped up preseason match for the Thorns against OL Reign. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. That's Apple Music, Spotify, and everywhere else. Follow us on Twitter at SoccerMaidenPDX, at Chris Reifer, and at Ryan T. Clark with an E. Thank you for joining us, and we will see y'all next week.